Hi, everybody. Welcome to this episode of the Modern Web Podcast. Today we have Taras and Ben on the podcast. And Taras, can you go ahead and just really quickly introduce yourself?
Okay. Hey, Tracy. Hello, everybody. I run Ember Sherpa. I tweet about all kinds of Ember stuff. I really am very dedicated to Ember, but I'm really curious about technology and so I'm really looking forward to finding out from Ben about what his thoughts, his views are on technology.
Cool. And Ben does a lot of really awesome things at Netflix, ArcGIS, etc. Ben, do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Ben Lesh. I'm a senior front-end engineer on the developer experience, edge developer experience team at Netflix. I also am like a project lead on or a lead contributor in ArcGIS 5. So,
how did you start contributing to ArcGIS? How did that come about?
Well, that came about because I had some ideas about trying to create some sort of standard for observable type libraries like, you know, Kefir and MostJS and RxJS for some sort of interoperability. And I had created a repository and I was trying to get a little traction around it. And I, shortly after I did that, I got taken aside by Ben Christensen, who was here at Netflix. Now he's at Facebook. And he was kind of the lead on RxJava, and he's a member of the ReactiveX community. And he took me aside along with Jaffer Hussein and Eric Meyer. And they were like, well, would you like to lead an effort to rewrite or at least try rewriting RxJS for more what like Netflix needs? So Netflix had some needs around RxJS with better performance and better debuggability. And also, Jaffer Hussein was working on the TC39's, the ES7 observable spec, along with Kevin Smith now, who's Zen parsing on GitHub. And so they kind of wanted an observable that met that spec as well, since that was the spec that Jaffer was trying to push through the TC39. And so we started experimenting with various methods to see, you know, how much faster we could make an observable than the observables that existed in RxJS at the time. I think it was RxJS 2. What happened from there is we decided, great, this is looking pretty good. Let's open source it under ReactiveX and, you know, label it alpha and see what kind of traction we get. And from there, we got further involvement from Matt Papasaki and, you know, of course, Andre Stoltz and OJ Kwan and Paul Taylor. Actually, Paul Taylor, also formerly of Netflix, came up with the Lyft architecture that we use for our operators and that sort of thing. And it really took off from there. The other thing that was a big kicker for it is when we started also cooperating with Google and folks on the Angular team. I was trying to convince them to stop using promises. I'm actually kind of anti-promises. Not completely anti-promises. They have their purpose, but I think they're misused a lot of times in single-page applications. And I actually had to bring Jaffer over to sell the the Google team on observables, the Angular team on observables rather than promises, because he's much better at, he's a better salesman than I am. But yeah, once they are on board, that also propelled it quite a bit because there was a lot more interest. We got more contributors and of course, they contributed as well.
Very cool.
Now I will say this, I am surprised because I did mention that I'm anti-promise, and usually that incites some sort of, what, wait, you don't like promises? But maybe I'm talking to a like-minded person. Is that possible?
I'm not religious about technology, so you know, and you have your perspective on RxJS probably gives your experience with it gives you a different perspective that I would have. I wouldn't like I you know I'm kind of I would kind of take your word for it. Like I think you I'm sure you have really good
Don't.
reasons for it.
All right, don't do that. That's my pro tip. Don't take my word for anything. In fact, you could have Brennan Eich sitting across from you telling you something about JavaScript, and you know if you think something smells about it, don't take his word for it. I think that it's probably best for everyone involved to hear out both sides of something and actually experiment themselves to see what's true or not true about people's claims, especially ones as
Well,
wild as being anti-promise, I suppose.
I have like the thing is I've written like I've done quite a lot of work with promises, and I do know that there are situations where it's just it's a bit awkward. Like when you're trying to build when you're trying to build user experiences where user has to collapse a bunch of different things and be able to and then have the data load. Or maybe stop loading or stop doing some operations when something else happening in the user ex in the UI. Like when you start doing those kind of things and you're using promises, it gets really wonky. Like it, and that's why like I do maybe I guess the a better answer is that I do actually see the kind of experiences that you can build, theoretically from my perspective, because I don't really have a lot of experience about RxJS, but it seems to be the kind of experiences that you could build if you're working with like a low-level primitive that gives you control of many events, like being able to work with many events. It seems that you would have a lot more. You're much more likely to succeed than you would be if you're using promises for everything. So that's kind of to me it seems that the primitives you would get with RxJS would probably be much like would actually be able to, would actually make it possible for you to create a more diverse user experiences than what we can do today with promises. But
Right.
from
Well, RxJS, so observables, RxJS aside, observables are cancelable, which is, and they're lazy, which are two fairly powerful features that promises don't have. But the flip side, okay, so if I was going to say one kind thing about promises is promises are extremely good types to use in situations where you want a guarantee that something is either going to successfully complete or error. Because promises are right now they're immutable. You get a promise and it's guaranteed to resolve or reject at some point. Technically, I guess you could have like a never-ending promise that never resolves, but they're really, really useful in situations like async await. Now there's talk of introducing a cancelable promise. I think that kind of takes some of the goodness away from promise to make it cancelable. That's more what observable is designed to do. And if you did have a cancelable promise and you're using async await, and then someone canceled said promise, in your async await block, I mean, what does that mean? What happens in that scenario? There's a variety of things like that. It kind of promises have like a nice, they've got this nice immutable state inside, and as soon as you make them cancelable, then all of a sudden you're able to kind of mutate that state. Like I'm not even sure what a cancelable promise would do if it's already resolved and then you cancel it, if that means all of a sudden the next person that tries to then the value out of the promise, do they get nothing? Or, I'm not sure what the behavior is in some of those cases. Observables are, I think, a little bit better for modern web application development because they can be canceled, which means in your situation, like you were talking about, where you're collapsing things and you don't want to load the data under these things you've collapsed anymore, you can simply just cancel your subscription to these observables that are getting your data, and that's done. It's taken care of. And the other thing is they can handle zero to n events, so that makes them much more suited to doing things like DOM events or WebSockets or any number of things like that, where you can get more than one value, where promises are really only suited to AJAX calls, and they're not suited to any AJAX call that you might want to cancel, which could be anything, especially in a single page app, because you switch views and you no longer care about the data that you started to load in your previous view, right? If it's not in, you don't want to execute the logic for what's going to happen when it does come in. You just want to abort the XHR. So I think that observables are better overall for web applications, modern web applications. But I do think promises have their place too. RxJS actually returns promises from certain things. Like there's a for each that actually comes from the ES7 spec that returns a promise that resolves or rejects based on whether or not the observable completes or errors. And what's interesting about using for each on an observable there is you can't cancel it. So indeed, promise is the right thing, because the promise is guaranteed to resolve or reject. And when you call for each, if it gives you back a promise, that means that you don't have a subscription that you can call unsubscribe on. So your observable is definitely going to either complete or error, unless it lasts forever for some reason. I think promises have their place. I think they were just overused because people were very excited about having a mechanism to, you know, eliminate callback hell, which it can be problematic.
Yeah, it's. I guess this is kind of connects well to my original idea behind like having a conversation with you, is that it kind of feels like people talk about web applications as being like, it's like. We talk about web applications, but a web application that is Facebook is different than a web application that is, Intracom, for example. You know, they're both web applications, but they're completely different in terms of what people do on them, who the users are, what the users use those applications for. And for the most part, like what's happening today, I see is that companies are still, there's a lot of companies, like the long tail of companies that are still trying to catch up to the modern web building, you know, using modern tools. And then you have people like yourself who are pushing the envelope and are kind of experiencing, you know, you're thinking about what is, in a way, like the best way to solve a particular problem. Like because I think the promises are one way to solve a particular problem, which is, like you said, like when you have async and you're going to be making, if you're making AJAX request and you want to handle the result of that, like a promise is actually a very convenient way of doing that. But if that one operation fits within 20 different things or 10 different things that a user has to do, or user might see as a result of that operation, like promises, it's not enough. Like if you start using promises just for doing all those little things, like you're managing so many of the you're doing so much work to get the promises to kind of fit together properly, that something else like observable might be much better. But we're not really talking about that yet, because we're not kind of at that point.
There are efforts to use promises for a series of events where you could have like an iterator of promise, right? And literally you just have this iterator, and every time you next it gives you a promise. You wait for that to resolve or don't, and then you next out another promise. And on each turn, it's going to do whatever is required to create this new promise, whatever the asynchronous action is. It's an interesting type because it has a lot of the same compositional things that observables do as far as being able to compose events as sets of things. It also has the trait of having built-in back pressure control, meaning that if my code isn't ready for the next value, then I just simply don't next and get another promise, right? So there are some kind of interesting things about it that way. Now, the downside to it is, you have an object allocation in every turn. Like you're allocating a new promise for every single individual value coming back from your event stream, where you don't have that with an observable. But observables, on the other hand, don't have that same back pressure mechanism. RX Java observables do have that, and there's been some discussion around Netflix about creating an RX flowable type that is pretty much the mirror image of observable, with one exception that composed through the guts of the observable, there is this idea of requesting, you know, n number of values, say 256 values from the previous source, and that composes up and tells the producer, hey, I need 256 values, and it pushes out 256 values just like any regular observable would, and it composes down through the use case there. And we actually talked about having that in RxJS 5. The use case there is primarily, I think, for really heavily laden node servers. It adds a little too much overhead for common like web application, web development use, where you don't have any of that overhead in today's observable type, where it's just pushing values at you and doesn't care how many you've requested, right? So there are some ways to control back pressure with observables, where you can have an observable start with a subject and then compose all the way down and then subscribe to itself like a snake eating its tail. And then what happens is you prime it with a value. The value goes down, does some asynchronous thing, handles it, and then when it gets to the bottom, says, hey, give me another one, and that goes back up to the top and, you know, goes back down through the chain again, and it makes a circle. But, I mean, there are some interesting things that have been done with promises and treating events as sets. I think that performance-wise and ease of use-wise, those things are probably a little inadequate compared to what you can do with any observable library like Most or Bacon or Keffer or RxJS, because they're a little bit more designed for that use case.
All right, everybody, thank you so much for listening. To Ross and Ben, thank you so much for being a part of the Modern Web Podcast, and we'll see you on the next episode.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much.